Listening to Colchonero Chat, the premier English language podcast on Atletico Madrid and a part of Into the Calderon, SB Nation's home for all things Atletico. I'm Jeremy Barron, my guest on this edition of Colchonero Chat, making his second consecutive appearance on the program, is Robert Walker. Robert Walker is the guest on this edition of Colchonero Chat. He is here to discuss Atletico Madrid's 1-0 win over Real Betis on Saturday, one of those victories that didn't really feel like a victory, but 3 points won nonetheless. Robert is also here to talk about last Friday's Copa del Rey draw, which saw Atletico pitted against Eibar in the quarterfinals of that competition. We'll preview the first leg of that tie and more after this.
Yeah, so that's that.
Cool.
Let's start with the La Liga whip around as ever, Robert.
All right. You want me to do that?
Yeah, I'll start it. I'll start her off. All right, like I cool. said, you know.
Yeah, all right.
18 match days complete. 18 match days down in Liga Santander. 20 more to go. Almost halfway home. Very, very nearly halfway home. No Friday games, so we start on Saturday with Leganés 0, Athletic Club Bilbao 0. Big result there for Athletic. Big missed opportunity. As a finished goalless, and shit, where was I going with this? Okay, I'll edit this. A big missed opportunity for Athletic there ahead of their game against Atletico at San Mamés next weekend. Aritz Aduriz got booked, so he will miss that game at San Mamés. And just again, the big missed opportunity away at a side that is hovering around the drop zone. Athletic still out of the European places on 28 points through 18 weeks. Barcelona 5, Las Palmas 0. A bit of a surprising result that, as Barcelona just completely demolish Las Palmas, who are feeling pretty good after their midweek win at the Calderon. Not feeling so good after that game.
Yeah, they've been on a bit of a tough run.
Yeah, it's been weird with them, especially away from home. They're much different away from home, and they have the devil's line here: 6 wins, 6 draws, 6 losses.
So they do, yeah.
At Riazor, Deportivo La Coruña 0, Villarreal 0. Another big result in the European, the race for the European places. Missed opportunity for Villarreal to pick up 3 points away. All they had to do was score a goal. Could not do it. Rafael Santos Borre on loan from Atleti started and played 67 minutes. But Villarreal falling to 6th with that draw, their 7th of the season. On to Sunday. Valencia won.
Yay, at long last.
They beat Espanyol 2-1 under caretaker manager Voro, who looks to have sealed that position for the remainder of the season. Celta Vigo 1, Alaves 0, 10-man Alaves very nearly working out the scoreless draw from this game. But a very, very late goal hands Celta the win. Celta now 4 points out of the final Europa League place. At El Molinón, Sporting Gijón 2, Eibar 3. Just 5 points picked up from the last 15 games for Sporting Gijón, who are now very deep in the relegation fight. Speaking of the relegation fight, Granada 1, Osasuna 1. This relegation 6-pointer saw 9-man Granada just get the draw against a continually unimpressive Osasuna. Both sides just have one win this season. Granada 6 points from safety, Osasuna 7 points from safety after that. Finally, on Sunday, the game of the week, the game of the year perhaps, Sevilla 2, Real Madrid 1, Madrid's 40-game unbeaten streak over, finally, as Sergio Ramos' own goal sparked Sevilla into a comeback win, which was finished off by Stefan Jovetic in the 2nd minute of stoppage time. What a game this was, Robert.
I know it, and Sergio Ramos' first ever own goal in La Liga, which was surprising to me. I would have thought he would have had more. I know.
He just scores big goals.
Yeah, big goals and red cards is sort of his MO.
Yeah. Finally, the game today at La Rosaleda, Malaga 0, Real Sociedad 2. Sociedad back into the top 5 with their 10th win of the campaign. The top 6 looks like this. Real Madrid still top on 40 points with a game in hand on everybody. Sevilla on 39 points, Barcelona on 38. Atletico on 34 after their win, which we'll talk about in a minute. Real Sociedad on 32, and Villarreal in 6th on 31 points. The one result we did not talk about, we will get to it now. Atletico Madrid 1, Real Betis 0. Atletico 1, Real Betis 0. You know, my favorite part of this game, Rob, was when it ended.
Yeah, exactly. So the first half, you know, finally there was a goal in the first half, but and then the second half there was nothing.
I saw you sneakily predict it would, the first half would be goalless, and then 2 minutes later Gaetan scores.
I know, exactly, yeah. It was the complete opposite of how it's been lately.
Yeah, Atleti actually got off to a flyer, which we talked about lately on the program. It's not something that they have done very often. Throughout the season, but not this time. The first 20 minutes, Atleti were brilliant. And Nico Gaetan scoring his first league goal for 3 months on a really well-executed counterattack. Saul Niguez picking out Shimi Rosalico to his right. No, Rosalico delivered a cross that was deflected by, I think, Ryan Donk deflected it right into Gaetan's path, and he couldn't miss from 6 yards out. Really nice sliding finish to put Atleti ahead 1-0, and that would really be all she wrote. There really was not much more from this game.
A lot going on, really.
Wretched game.
It was a good finish from Gaetan, I thought, sort of running in on goal like that. It was pretty difficult for him to get onto it, but... Oof, even still, pretty rough. Atleti had less shots on target, but they pulled it out. It's sort of going back to the old style, I guess.
Yeah, the old style under the first years of Simeone's reign that Atleti have tried to kind of move on from, evolve from, but inevitably find themselves right back where they started. Just 6 shots for Atleti over the 90 minutes, 3 on target. Real Betis, by comparison, 10 shots and 6 on target. With less possession, Atleti edged the possession battle about 52% to 48%. But no, I thought Gaetan was really quite good indeed. Really his best hour in an Atleti shirt. He got an opportunity and he ran with it.
Yeah, he did well. He won a number of, I think, 2 of his dribbles, which was the best on the team. And he was really one of the main attacking threats in this game. And Torres also started, I believe. So, you know, it was kind of a strange one. I mean, we'll take it, but not exactly the best performance or a convincing one, really.
Yeah. I think Kieran Canning, La Liga writer, freelancer around Europe, termed this as peak Atletico. And I would agree with that assessment.
Yeah.
1-0 win, unconvincing, but Atleti just proved impenetrable by the end. Miguel Angel Moya responsible for a lot of that. He was fantastic. Kept Ruben Castro out multiple times. Real Betis' leading goal scorer with 8 goals. Did not get one on Saturday. Moya was there to stop him every time. Thought he was great.
Yeah, Moya did very well, and he sort of slotted right in right when after the Oblak injury, which was sort of what we were hoping for and what you can really expect from sort of a veteran keeper that you have around. So,
yeah, it's all about being prepared, all about staying prepared, and Moya has certainly done that. Just made 6 saves in this
game. Yeah, he hasn't looked out of place at all, yeah.
Yeah, very, very assured indeed. And Torres did start. Didn't really do a whole lot, but that's kind of been par for the course. Yeah, I shouldn't say that. He was pretty good in the air. I think the most value he has right now is just being a willing runner, pressing up when he needs to, and you know, winning these battles in the air, which he's done pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, he's still a good athlete, which is sort of his best quality at the moment, but sort of when he gets it around the goal, you don't necessarily trust him to finish or have a good touch to pass off to someone else, which is a bit concerning.
Yeah, his speed has left him. To a lesser degree, his finishing has left him. But what hasn't left him, as you said, is his athleticism, his willingness to work. That's, in the end, what endears him to Simeone. Think he did all right. Would like him to be a bit more of a willing participant in front of goal, as in finish chances when he gets them.
Yeah, scoring goals.
Didn't let him get very many chances, so you know, it is what it is. Carrasco came back. He started on the bench. Gaetan was pulled just after the hour for Carrasco. What did you think of Carrasco? Did he look good to you?
He looked all right. When players are coming back from injury, it's always hard to sort of tell where they're at, but I think we'll probably see more in the coming games. I reckon he'll probably get a run out in one of the two Eibar fixtures, get some minutes on his back so he can get his fitness back up to a good level. But yeah, I thought he looked good overall, but you know, we'll see what happens in the coming weeks.
He brought a spark that Atleti really needed. They couldn't really capitalize on it, but brought a lot of speed, a lot of pace, lots and lots of energy to a game that was, after about 20 minutes, really, really lacking in energy. He had one really good chance that Antonio Adan kind of miraculously parried away. He cut inside. Can't remember who he got the pass from. Might have been Griezmann, but he cut inside and just uncorked this vicious shot from pretty close range too. It was around the penalty spot. This was about 10, 12 yards out, and Adan just did all he could to parry it away. So that was encouraging, and yeah, we should certainly see more of Carrasco in the coming games.
Well, he is the best winger at the club, and over the sort of December period when he was out, the club very much missed his what he provides from the wing, from his attacking threat, big time, so it's good to have him back.
Indeed, and still the leading scorer, or I think joint leading scorer with Griezmann. Gamero also came off the bench. Speaking of speed and missing kind of that speed and dynamic play that one brings, really would have liked to see Gamero start. Would like him to start week in, week out, but that is not exclusively my decision.
Unfortunately, not.
Yeah. We talked about what Torres does offer. I think it's just not as much as Gamero offers. Gamero offers a lot more speed, a lot more finishing ability. He's formed really good chemistry with Griezmann that Torres doesn't really have, in part because Torres cannot pass or finish right now.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that Gamero's much better than Torres at this point in his career. So I think probably in a bigger game, Gamero probably would have started, but we'll have to wait and see, I guess.
Yeah. Angel Correa didn't get off the bench in this one. Correa starting to get a little more, or a little less consistent time, which is a bit strange. Thought there could have been a use for him in this game, especially since I thought Saul wasn't terribly impressive at right wing. Other than like the opening few minutes, I didn't think Saul was particularly good.
Yeah, and that's obviously not his ideal position. I would agree. I think Correa is much better as a, if you need an attacking winger, he's the best man for the job. But I suppose the thinking was Saul provides you more defensive cover than Correa would. But I mean,
yeah, he does. But yeah, again, the wing is not his preferred position.
Right.
In the middle. It was, interestingly enough, when he was in the middle earlier in the game, he started counterattacks, showed some nice moves with Cime Vrsaljko, had some nice moments with the Croatian. So, yeah, would have liked to see Correa there. But while we didn't get Saul in the middle, we got Koke in the middle, and he led the team in touches with 123, according to Who Scored. Only created one chance despite completing, you know, literally hundreds of passes. So,
yeah, I think he was good again. He was good in the last game as well. So everyone's starting to pick up form. There was sort of a dip, a team-wide dip with Griezmann not scoring for a while, and Koke and Saul were sort of fell off a little bit. But they've all three of those in particular have picked up in recent weeks.
Yep, and again, Koke looking more natural playing through the middle, which is not really surprising. If you followed this team at all, you would know that Koke's best position is as a central midfielder.
There's three good ones, and unfortunately that leaves an odd man out, typically either Saul or Koke. So, yeah.
And this is the problem that we've been talking about, right? This is not the way forward for Atleti. It's working right now. I'm going to be interested to see what happens when it stops working, right? When Atleti do drop points by playing this style. They weren't too far away on Saturday. If Betis had been, like, even a shade impressive, then this could have easily finished 1-1, 1-0. Damn it, I need to get my dad to stop texting me. Where the hell is this? I just got this Mac. I'm trying to find where Do Not Disturb is on it.
Oh,
I'll edit it. Yeah, he's giving me updates on the Warriors game because I'm doing the podcast right now.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and if Betis had been, like, at all impressive, this easily could have been 1-1 or even goalless, because Atleti's goal came on an error from Ryan Donk, who was otherwise very solid in Betis' five-man back line.
Yeah, the other player for Betis I was somewhat impressed with was Danny Ceballos. I thought he did quite well.
Ceballos was fantastic. He's been linked with Atletico under Gus Poyet when he wasn't playing very much. He was linked with a move to Atletico. I'm sure Betis would like to keep him now that he's playing more under Victor Sanchez. He was brilliant, I thought, all over the place, doing a little bit of everything, really showing just how good he is. Just 20 years old. Thought he was brilliant and by far Betis' best player. Antonio Adan made a couple good saves. He's been one of the best keepers in the league this year.
But yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
On the balance, Betis just was not very impressive.
Yeah.
That worked out for Atleti. Against sterner opposition, against better opposition, Atleti are going to have to do better. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens when Atleti drop points in this setup, because they've won 3 on the trot in La Liga. They have improved since the debacle at Villarreal last month. But this is just not the way forward. We talked about it on the program before. This is not the way forward. But under Simeone, it may be the way we get.
Yeah, they have been sort of flattering to deceive in the past few weeks. I don't know where the big slip-up will come. It could come at San Mamés, because Bilbao are a good team, but we'll see. I mean, it's the defensive setup long-term. It's the way Simeone wants to go, but I don't know how long it can hold up, sort of with stopgap players in there.
Like, that's 3 straight clean sheets in La Liga, which we're used to seeing. That's normal, per se. But what's not normal is, the 1-0 wins are normal, but what's not normal is looking so constipated in attack, which is kind of what Atleti were on Saturday.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's better opposition that's got to improve. Mattress maker of the match, I had Gaetan. I didn't think it was particularly close.
Yeah, either Gaetan or Moya for me.
Yeah, Moya was very, very good as well. Yeah, I guess it was close. Moya was very good as well. All right. Anything else from this game, or can we please stop talking about it?
Yeah, let's get out of this one as fast as we can.
Thank goodness. After this, we'll talk about Eibar and transfers. Stick with us. Before we continue, I'd like to let our listeners know that this episode of Colchonero Chat is being recorded with Zencastr. You know, making podcasts isn't all fun and games. Sometimes a Skype call drops and you have to call back repeatedly. The audio quality is poor or robotic sounding, and it's just tough to edit without removing large chunks of your show in post-production. Zencastr is trying to change all that. There's no need for Skype or any third-party service like it. You record your podcast straight through their website. Zencastr offers studio-quality sound even if your guest is far away. For example, I'm in Arizona on the west coast of the United States, and Rob is in Ohio in the Midwest. But thanks to the crystal-clear sound offered by Zencastr, you wouldn't have known that if I hadn't told you. Well, okay, maybe you would have if you looked at our Twitter bios, but that's not the point. Go to Zencastr.com to learn more about them. That's Zencastr.com. There was one more thing I wanted to touch on with the Betis game, and that was Simeone throwing a little bit of shade in his post-game presser, kind of defending the style of play that Atleti have readopted. I'm having my liberties with the English language tonight. Forgive me. He was asked about if this is the right way to win, and he said it doesn't matter how Atleti play, results matter. Look who won the Ballon d'Or this year.
Yeah, exactly.
Not really known for throwing shade.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, I can see where it's coming from on that one, but, you know, I mean, Ronaldo, he did go off injured in the Euros final and only scored the winning penalty, so, yeah.
For the penalty in, in Euro.
Exactly.
And of course, you want to stick up for, you know, your Ballon d'Or candidate in Antoine Griezmann. So pretty interesting stuff there from Cholo. Really excellent stuff.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if there's going to be any more mounting pressure because of this style of play over time.
I think there already has been, but Cholo has shown that he is going to wither it and survive it.
Don't care.
As long as it gets results, and ultimately that is what matters. The result is what matters. All right, on to the Copa del Rey quarterfinals. The draw for that was held on Friday. Atleti were drawn against Eibar, a side they just played on January 7. Like Las Palmas in the round of 16, Atleti recently playing this opponent. The rest of the Copa del Rey draw, and I want to talk about this as well, the rest of the Copa del Rey draw, Alcorcón and Alaves, Real Madrid and Celta Vigo, and Real Sociedad and Barcelona. Now, don't you think this just works out perfectly for the Federation?
Exactly, yeah. Barcelona and Real Madrid stay in it.
Yeah, because going from like less important to more important, Alcorcón and Alaves, one of those two... Damn it, stop texting me. One of those two is going to be in the Copa del Rey semifinal, which is going to be really important for them. For Alcorcón, it'd be amazing, a second division side in the last four of the Copa del Rey. For Alaves, first season back in La Liga, you're probably going to finish mid-table and get to the Copa del Rey semifinal. That's a pretty good year. One of those two teams will get to say, we played Real Madrid in the Copa del Rey semifinal before Real Madrid obliterated us and got to the final. The other semifinal, it looks certainly set up to be Barcelona and Atletico Madrid, right? The first leg of Barcelona's tie is at Anoeta against Real Sociedad, where they never win, but that doesn't matter. They won't have to win the first leg. They go to Camp Nou and win the second leg, and they're through.
Yeah, it's going to be...
And Atleti have a pretty straightforward tie against Eibar.
It's going to be pretty similar to, I think, for Barcelona, it's going to be similar to their tie against Athletic Bilbao. Real Sociedad will put up a brave performance in the first leg, and there'll be a lot of hype about it, and then they'll just demolish them in the Camp Nou. So,
yeah,
it all seems a little suspicious.
Yeah, suspicious. Ultimately, Barcelona will prevail after huffing and puffing. You feel more confident about Atleti getting to the final, not to think too far ahead, but we'll talk about the game in a second, but overall, how confident are you in Atleti reaching the Copa del Rey final for the first time in 4 years?
Well, I mean, a lot will depend on their draw into the semifinals, but I think it's a pretty good chance at this point, because against an opponent like Eibar, who have been good, I don't think they'll have enough over two legs, really, to do much against Atleti, but I think there's a pretty good chance it could happen. I mean, the semifinal will be tough if it's either Real Madrid or Barcelona, but
it will be Barcelona.
I think it could definitely happen.
They want to set it up to where it's either a Clásico in the final or a Madrid derby in the final. I don't think anyone really cares about a Barcelona-Atletico final.
No, I mean, I would be interested to see that game, but no. The league doesn't care.
I don't think that's in the Spain's best interest in getting a Barcelona-Atleti final. I think they'd much rather have it in the semifinal. But at any rate, kind of pulling it back to our little corner of the Copa del Rey quarterfinal, against Eibar, a side which caused Atleti some problems in their league meeting on January 7 at Ipurua. A very cold day, icy pitch, if you'll recall. Eibar really unfortunate not to go ahead. Really unfortunate not to get on the score sheet at all over the 90 minutes. Atleti eventually grinding out a 2-0 win with goals from Saúl and Griezmann. The first leg on Thursday at the Vicente Calderón. The second leg on the following Wednesday. Yeah, it's Wednesday at Ipurua. Simeone really challenging for the cup this year, so we can expect a pretty strong side, especially at home in the first leg when it's going to be really important for Atleti to get a leg up.
Yeah, and especially given that the trip to San Mamés is that the weekend right after that, it's a tough little run in there if he plays a full-strength side against Eibar. But I agree with you, I think he will. Because this is a major opportunity for a trophy this year for Atleti, I think.
Yeah, the Copa field is less congested than it was last year. Last year, Celta Vigo eliminated Atleti in the quarterfinals. The year before, it was Barcelona in the quarterfinals. Eibar, again, no disrespect to him. Really a good team. It's a really good, solid team. Underrated. Consistently mid-table. Last two seasons, they have been right there. And they're just a few points off of Europa League plays. I think they're 3 points back.
So yeah, they're having a fantastic season.
Yeah, and they're playing really good football, unlike they did in their Garitano and when they first came up to La Liga. So it won't be easy. I mean, it never is with Atleti, and plus they're a good team over there. Los Amorosos are a good team. But that said, Atleti will probably have too much for him. First leg is going to be really important. And we can expect a strong team both ways, depending on how that goes. Perhaps one or two weakened teams for the second leg on January 25, on that Wednesday.
Yeah, I guess the hope would be that you can sort of settle the tie in the first leg. I mean, in an ideal world, I don't know if that'll happen, but so that you can rest in the second game.
Because there is going to be a pretty tough away trip to San Mamés on Sunday. So Atleti are going to hope to run and hide.
Yes, exactly. And hopefully get something.
I'm going to predict a 2-0 win for that one.
For the first Eibar game?
First leg, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. 2-0 will probably be 2 or 3-0, I'd say. But we'll see.
Glad we're in agreement. Let's talk about transfers.
Okay.
Even as Atleti are under transfer ban, the rumor mill continues to churn and spit out rumors, and it'll do what it does best. And today, we got a good one. Oh boy, did we get a good one. You remember Diego Costa, don't you?
Oh yeah, that guy.
Yeah, well, you may have heard he has been involved in a little bit of a spat with his coach at Chelsea, Antonio Conte. He was dropped for last weekend's game against Leicester, which resulted in a 3-0 win for Chelsea, pushing them 7 points clear in the Premier League. And Costa apparently not any closer to coming back to the Chelsea team. In fact, Chelsea may even sell him this summer. This is according to a report from Miguel Delaney in The Independent that Atletico, not just Atletico, but also Barcelona, are going to be circling around Costa this summer as Chelsea may look to sell the Brazilian-born Spaniard.
Yeah, certainly would be a big deal. The rumor was that a Chinese club had offered, you know, a ton of money and $500,000 in wages to him. So,
what, a week or something? Yeah, it was absurd.
Yeah, crazy. And it seems that his relationship with Antonio Conte is broken down, which seems strange. They both seem like very passionate people, but I guess when you put two fiery people together, it doesn't always work.
No, and Costa's always had the very headstrong attitude. That's not new. We knew that when he was at Atletico. He's always been a little difficult to deal with. Apparently, he's gotten too difficult for Conte now, just about 6 months after taking over, and Chelsea in a pretty strong position over in England. So Atleti rumored to be back in for Diego Costa. Of course, there would need to be a pretty significant sale in order to account for bringing Mr. Costa back to the Vicente Calderon or a stadium called Wanda. That's where Atleti are moving. And that big sale would probably come in the form of Antoine Griezmann. And I heard today that Griezmann's move to Manchester United, long mooted in the English press in particular, that move is likely to happen this summer. Now, this is not confirmed, but I heard it on pretty good authority today that that is a thing that is likely going to happen this summer.
Well, I think given the amount of money that Manchester United have and their need for more attacking quality, it seems like the story's been floating for a while, so it's not a huge surprise. But given the transfer ban, it's awkward for Atleti to have to deal with his departure.
Yep, and you've written about this, I've written about this, that we'd really had nothing concrete about Griezmann leaving. He'd always said in interviews how happy he was and how content he was and how much more he had to learn at Atletico. But there comes a time when the money gets to be too much. And let's face it, Griezmann has had a bit of a disappointing season. And I think more than a bit, he has had a disappointing season. Full stop. And United are desperate for a Wayne Rooney replacement. And they're willing to pay the buyout. So if Griezmann wants it and Atleti want the money, then I'm not really sure even a transfer ban is going to stop it at this point.
And it is, and it would be a massive amount of money. That is the thing. Yep, and United can certainly pay that.
And Atleti would be dumb to turn it down if United are willing to offer it and the player wants to go. So with that in mind, there will be a hole on Atleti's front line, a perhaps Diego Costa-sized hole in the front line. That would be more than enough to pay for Costa, and Atleti will in this case now have the leverage they did not have last summer. They could not convince Chelsea to sell, and in terms of the player himself, Costa in this case, the situation kind of remains the same. Costa has to tell Chelsea he wants to leave, and Chelsea have to throw their hands up and say, screw it, we'll sell him and go find a replacement. Those two things did not happen last summer, and it's why Atleti ended up with Kevin Gamero instead of Diego Costa.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things going on with the Costa deal. I mean, it is dependent upon the transfer ban being lifted in the summertime. And, you know, Chelsea being willing to sell him by that point, because at the moment he still is the joint top scorer in the Premier League. Would be very expensive. But I think they may be willing to sell him. Obviously, he's a good bit older than Griezmann at this point, so. And he does have a iffy fitness history, as we know, so that's a bit of an issue.
But he's been great this year. He's been fit this year. He's really thrived in Conte's system, and Atleti still want him back. That never went away, even after the Gamero transfer was made official. That never went away. Barcelona's reported interest is interesting, for lack of a better word. The report indicated that maybe Barcelona would be willing to break up or alter at least Messi, Suarez, and Neymar, or MSN. But in terms of jostling with Atletico, who have wanted Costa back ever since he left, and who Costa has a pretty substantial history with, I think Barcelona would find it difficult to convince DC to make the move to Catalonia.
Yeah, and I think he would prefer a return to Atleti. We sort of saw this last summer when they had that whole weird lip-reading thing with Sergio Ramos. I mean, it would seem that he would prefer to come back.
It was during that lip-reading session, or the hushed tones he was speaking to Sergio Ramos in, that he seemed to indicate that Chelsea were the ones not letting him go. He had agreed a deal, Atleti had agreed a deal, but Chelsea did not want to let him go. And it was understandable. Chelsea had no reason to let him go. They couldn't find a replacement, and Costa wasn't so unhappy that he put in a transfer request. Now it seems that things have changed. Now it seems that Costa is unhappy enough to the point where he's grown unsettled, and he is willing to ask for a move, and he is probably more likely to be granted it, as Chelsea are not only likely to be in the Champions League next season, but they're likely to win the Premier League.
That's right, and they definitely would want to sell him now to a Chinese club.
Not in the middle of your title.
I think that's a little bit ridiculous, but
yeah, you know, call it the George Mendes effect.
Yeah, well, that's a whole shady character, that guy.
Yeah, and even if Costa were to move to China, they put in these new restrictions where you can only field three international players at once.
That's right. I did see that, and I believe the club that he was rumored to move to is also the one that just bought Axel Witsel. So, yeah, they got money. That's for sure.
Yeah, and they want it. The Chinese Super League is really concerned about the spending, and they want to try to curb it and promote Chinese players playing in the Chinese League. What a concept.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, they're investing tons in that league.
Yeah. What else we got? We have Marseille being linked with Theo Hernandez, the very, very promising left-back, younger brother of Lucas Hernandez, currently on loan at Alaves. Don't think it's very likely he would go.
No, given that the two Hernandez brothers turned down Man City, I doubt he'd rather go back to go to Marseille, even because of his, you know, nationality. I still think they would prefer to keep their development going at Atleti for a few more years.
Yeah, he's got this release clause. I think it's 24 million euros. Yeah, 24 million euros. Even with new ownership, would Marseille be willing to pay that for an 18-year-old? I don't think so.
Yeah, and they don't have a huge amount of money.
Yeah. And at any rate, if Simeone stays, that will keep departures to a minimum. So, I mentioned this on the Year in Review podcast last month. It was last month. That I think he'll be challenging Felipe as for starting left back next year. So really would not make sense from that standpoint to let him go.
Yeah, that would be for the best, I think. He's extremely promising, and we'd like to see him play for a certain amount of time before he left, and I think he would like to do that as well. So,
yeah, I think he's been Alaves' best player this year.
Yeah, and they've been a very good team defensively, so yeah, good signs. Yeah.
Just a goal conceded per game. They've been awesome. A bit of stadium news now. A stadium called Wanda is moving along. Not quite done yet, but it's moving along. Atleti opened a Twitter account dedicated just to Wanda Metropolitano news. They opened it yesterday with a video on the roof, the Una Cubierta Unica, a unique roof. It's what's called a quote-unquote taut membrane roof. Get your mind out of the gutter. It's specifically designed to keep in noise, keep fans from getting wet when it's raining, et cetera. It's supposed to do all these cool things. It looks like it's getting done. You can watch the video. I wrote up a little post about it. It's on Insta Calderon. Like the rest of the stadium, it looks pretty cool. It's going to look even cooler when it's done, whenever that is.
Yeah, it does. It's looked cool throughout this process, and it's good seeing that there is some kind of progress being made. You can see concrete in the pictures in the video that's on the site.
Concrete.
So. Yes, yes. Seeing concrete is always good.
I've heard it's very important in building things.
Yes, exactly. To, you know, for structure and whatnot.
Yeah, I've heard it's kind of an essential element. And Atleti's still insisting that the stadium is going to get done in time for next season. Others are more skeptical, but the club is insistent that it will. Come hell or high water, it's going to get done, and everyone's going to be able to get to it, and it's going to be amazing.
It's going to be. We shall see. Well, and I guess sort of on this note, because it was announced around the same time with the change of logo, we've learned today that it could have been a whole lot worse with the change of logo.
Yes. Yeah, I'm talking about an open revolt. Juventus' new logo. I have a Juventus fan friend. I'll try to pull up his exact quote. Not totally safe for this podcast, but I believe he gets the point across. Quote, "The bottom literally looks like a stick figure's ass," unquote.
Yeah.
Our friends at Juventus Nation, black, white, and red all over, Juventus is SB Nation blogs, they weren't too happy either. It seems like this change in badge has been universally panned. Not unlike Atletico's, you guys get in touch with us when your fans start revolting and chanting "Don't touch the badge" at every game.
Yeah, I mean, I would be more upset with that badge change. The Athletic one, I mean, there were small cosmetic changes, but nothing on this level.
Yeah, exactly. This is, like, you're ditching that legendary crest that you've had for, what, 100 years?
Yeah, so, and it's only been slightly changed, so, yeah, I mean. It's
always been Juve's badge, and now they have this crap, which is, like, two lines.
I mean, it's weird. It's kind of, I can imagine it going on some of those weird, like, very tight sort of painted-on jerseys that are popular these days. But, God, yeah. It's going to be awful.
Oh, man. Yeah, we feel for you guys at Juventus Nation.
Yeah, stay strong.
Our Juve friends everywhere, stay strong. Yeah. We're always around. Our door is always open.
This is a support group. Yeah, if you need to come talk about it, we're here. We're here.
Yeah. We know that feel, bro. All right. Anything else?
I think that's it for me.
That's wonderful. That'll do it for me as well. So that's it for Culture Neuro Chat. This Monday night edition. We'll be back on Thursday to preview Atleti's trip to San Mamés against Athletic. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at JB Barron. You can follow Rob at Trappin, TRAUPPIN. You can also follow the blog's account at Into the Calderon and like us on Facebook. Do interact with us on Facebook and on Twitter and on the blog. Leave a comment. We really pride ourselves on interacting with you guys, so it would really mean a lot if you could leave a comment every now and then. Let us know what's up. Let us know your thoughts on various things relating to the club we all love.
Yes, also, indeed. Get in touch.
Listen and subscribe to all new and archived episodes of this program on iTunes, Stitcher, and Acast. iTunes, Stitcher, and Acast are where you can find Culture Neuro Chat. Subscribe, listen, rate, review, especially leave a rating and review. I want to emphasize that really helps us out here. Lets us know what we're doing right, lets us know what we're doing wrong, and really helps us out at the blog in other ways too. So please do that if you are so inclined and if you are so kind. All right, that concludes Culture Neuro Chat. We will see you next time. Adios.
Goodbye.